Warning: this program contains content that may not be suitable to some listeners. It contains decency, truth, ageless wisdom, a father who cares. It's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations. I'm an executive director for Christian Home Educators. I'm a pastor, but the reason I'm here today, I'm a father of five. Daniel, Emily, Rebecca, Joy, Bethany, and Abigail. Five reasons to be on this program today. I'm raising my children in a day where 36% of children are born without fathers. Half of marriages end in divorce. And today we want to look at teenage sex. It's not getting any better, folks. Through the 80s and 90s, it's just getting worse in our country. Now, we're going to talk about teen purity today on this program. So if you have some tiny tots in the area, I'd suggest you get them involved in something else for a few minutes while we talk about this important issue in the raising of our children. And this is important to me because I have a 14-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl coming up and a 10-year-old girl and a few others. Well, I just did some research on this from Child Trends, and this is their facts at a glance online. Teen abortions and teen pregnancies were down in the 1990s. That's good news, I guess. But there has been no decline in the number of teens engaging in fornication. Now, these guys tout the use of contraceptives as a means by which the teen pregnancies and abortions have come down, but we've got the same problem. Now, President Clinton's behavior didn't help much. In fact, it's had a huge impact on teens. I don't want to go any more detail than that on the air. But as the data comes out in 2005, 55% of males between ages 15 and 19 have engaged in some kind of sexual behavior. That's 55% of teens. That's over half the teens you see walking the mall have engaged in some kind of sexual behavior. It's 54% for females, so just about the same. And ladies and gentlemen, did a little research for this program today, and Plymouth Plantation, one of the very first colonies planted in the United States of America some 400 years ago, planted by largely Christians. They were separatists, they were pilgrims, and there has been extensive research done on the early records for the first 40 years or so of that particular colony, and they have found 11% engaged in premarital sex. 11% of one of the very first colonies, largely Christian colonies planted in America, 11% engaged in premarital sex. So the problem has always been with us. It's been with us since Adam and Eve took a little bit of that fruit out of the garden, and we're still doing it. Today we want to talk about this issue because we know that premarital sex can destroy lives. It can destroy families. It can destroy marriages. It has very deep and difficult impacts on our lives. And with me today is Julie Hiramine. She is director of the ministry Generations of Virtue. She's in studio with us. And she's been equipping folks to empower their children to be pure in our culture for a number of years now. She is based in Colorado Springs. She is raising four daughters with her husband, Kay. Her daughters are Brianna, Stacia, Alyssa, and Hannah. Welcome to Generations, Julie.
Thank you, Kevin.
So good to have you with us. Julie, how did you get involved in this ministry that focuses on the issue of purity?
Well, I suppose anyone who has four daughters would think twice about it. And as my husband and I talked more and more about how we were going to prepare them, I realized that many parents were not prepared to face this issue as our culture grows more and more difficult to deal with.
55%? Julie, that's over half. And you look at your daughters, you're not going to give over two.
No
way.
You're
not going to give over two of them to a sensually driven, sexually active premarital situation. Not at all. And, you know, I understand the burden you have. I've got four daughters as well. and they're coming up. And my vision for them is that they marry in white, that they marry pure, and they're ready to raise a godly family together. And this is a very important constituent of that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I believe God is raising a generation, this generation, to stand up and hold a banner of purity to begin to turn the tide in our culture today.
Amen. You know, you talk about a sensually driven world. It's a sensually driven world. Why don't you describe that for just a moment without too much detail?
Well, we know what our culture is facing. And with the media influences, with every time you turn on the TV or you get on the internet, it's everywhere surrounding us. And so we need to begin teaching our children discernment in those areas as they're, you know, just as compounded as it comes to them.
I mean, you see the billboards, you see the way people are dressed. We are constantly drawn to the sexual outside of the context of marriage. And one of the things that I think you see a lot is this body image thing. You know, people are really trying to present the body as a sexual object. It's really pervasive. I think it drives a lot of young people out there, even girls, doesn't it?
Oh, with definitely the daughters, it has an effect. You know, if you can go out and buy clothes, maybe up to 6X, you're safe. Turn to size 7, and it's a whole different world. I was reading from an article from Time Magazine that said Banana Republic is introducing a size 00 now. And it's to draw in the preteen girls, and it's only going to influence those girls who are teens to be smaller and smaller.
And it's just selling a world to our little girls that is just vain, empty, hollow. It's not going to give them satisfaction. And yet, I think there are millions of young girls out there, 12, 13, 14 years of age, and they find value in life in that, don't they?
Oh, yes. I mean, in what they look like and how they allure boys to themselves. Girls need to be taught how to behave and how to handle themselves within that when they're surrounded by that.
Okay, we talk about sexual sin in this sensually saturated age. There's a lot of S's there. But it affects boys and girls, doesn't it? Does it affect them equally?
It affects them equally, but it affects them different. Boys, you know, it's what they see. So therefore, what girls wear is going to really affect them. Girls, it's, you know, many times how they feel, but they're drawn in by acceptance and wanting to be in the center of things.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking with Julie Hiromine, who's director of the ministry Generations of Virtue. A critical topic in a day where 55% of young teens are engaged in sexual behavior outside of marriage. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about how you as parents can equip your young ladies to take on this age and take it on with an attitude, a perspective of purity. That next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. Be back in a moment. Folks, we're back. This is Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. Today, the topic is a critical topic because it's affecting at least half of those parents and those families that exist out there in America. 55% of children between the ages of 15 and 19 engage in some sort of sex. And that isn't much different among Christians. I've got a story here, The Sex Lives of Christian Teens from ChristianityToday.com. And what this article says is the rates aren't that much different among Christians. It is different among those who have a very close relationship with God, or quote-unquote, you know, those that are committed. The rates tend to be a little less, but for the most part, Christian teens are basically taken by this same monster, aren't they?
Yeah, most Christian teens, if you read, they have the same, you know, challenges as anybody else. And what happens is there's all the technical side of being a virgin. And so they push the envelope again and again so that they, you know, might not have had sex, but they're right there on the edge. And so what we really encourage is we need to, as parents, create a higher standard for our kids. Encourage them to wait for their first kiss on their wedding day. Mm-hmm. And encourage that highest standard for them and teach them to stick with that side of it, because you can have all the same dangers by pushing the envelope the way they do.
You talk about getting on the edge, pushing the envelope, Julie. I think that a lot of times our hearts aren't right when we are asking ourselves the question, how close can I get? It really boils down to a heart issue here, doesn't it?
Right. And it boils down to not only saying, no, don't do this, don't do that, but what do they do instead? This is a season. If love doesn't awaken, they can pursue God with all their heart. And that's what I really encourage the teens. God has given you a unique season. You don't have a family. You don't have job responsibilities. Things like that are only going to grow. This is a time to pursue God and deepen that intimacy with Him. Because only with that intimacy with the Lord will you really experience true intimacy with your spouse later on.
I think somebody once said, you can't replace something with nothing, and nature abhors a vacuum. And ultimately, if we are so consumed with this sensually driven age, rather than being consumed with things like the kingdom of God and his righteousness, developing our own character, developing our own calling in life and these sorts of things, and preparing for that marriage and that one that God has reserved for us, if we're doing these sorts of things, we're not going to be taken to the edge.
No, and there's so many ways we can help our children. God has put them in a family. God has put them in a place where, with siblings, they can learn how to treat each other, learn how to serve one another, learn how to build that character. So once they're in a marriage, it doesn't just happen the day you get married that you're really able to love that way. That's why divorce is so high.
And I think that family is so critical. To be in a godly, nurturing, healthy family is essential if we're going to be nurturing healthy young teens that will have their own healthy family someday. Let's talk about parents, because, you know, I think there's parents out there that communicate well with their children when they're very young. And yet, when those kids turn to their teen years, it's a whole different ball game. Some parents really struggle with that.
Well, and it's just the ability to be open and not be surprised by any question or anything they come to you with, that there is no taboo subject with which they can speak to you, because it's so much better if they come to us. If we are the first ones that they hear these things, or if they've heard something, you know, on TV or from a friend, they can come and say, Mom, Dad, what does this mean? I don't understand what they said. And if we go, oh, I can't believe you just said that, you know, obviously they're not going to be very open to doing that again.
Right. So those paths of communication have to be nurtured. But how does communicating with teens differ from communicating with children in their younger ages?
I think it's spending time, and it's spending the time whether they communicate or not. Yeah. And that might mean sometimes they're pretty quiet, but there will be a time when they do talk.
I think somebody once said that discipling our little boys is like duck hunting. It's 3 hours behind the blind for about 10 seconds of action. So you're right. There's nothing that can replace that quantity time, because ultimately quantity time will give birth to quality time. Let's focus on daughters for just a second, Julie. I know you have four of them. I have four. We want to train our daughters in this area of purity. Is this a mom's job? I know my wife works with our little girls an awful lot, but what about the dad?
You know, the dad is very, very key. There's statistics out that girls are over 90% more likely to have sex before they are married if dads do not spend time with them on a predictable basis. And that for dads can be whatever works. You know, if you travel, do something every time you're home. If it's every Saturday morning, you go do something. Whatever you do, that you invest time on a predictable basis, they know they're going to have time with dad.
And you know, every one of my little girls just loves a hug. I mean, you know what? There is no wasted hug ever. Just take some time and hug her and pray with her and pray God's blessing over her. That's the kind of thing that ultimately pays back in a lot of different ways.
Dad's blessing their children is huge. Time that you hug them, that you spend time praying, a blessing over them is very key. Another thing is as they begin to grow and change and develop, to not pull away. To still hug and love them just like you did before, because they'll begin to wonder, well, what's wrong with me? If, you know, my dad doesn't treat me like he did before. And so to keep that consistent as they develop.
Julie, you know, a mom has a role in this as well. What can moms do to prepare their daughters for sexual purity and for preparing for marriage?
I think one of the keys is that the parents' marriage needs to be one that the kids look up to in a way that says, I want to be married someday. So many kids are just forsaking even wanting to be married or wanting to be in deeper emotional relationships because what's been modeled to them is not something they want to follow. And so just encourage moms to be talking to their daughters, to be preparing and equipping them for that time when they are getting married, and to be ones who, you know, when dad comes home, give him a big hug and welcome home, honey, how'd you have a good day at work, that displays like this marriage is awesome. It's a God-given thing. It's great.
Yeah, and more often than not, little girls want to grow up and be like their mothers or have marriages like their father had with their mother. Let's just talk a little bit about how to raise our little girls when they're young, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age, with this idea of purity. It really begins with modesty.
oftentimes, doesn't it? It just, the way a little girl presents herself. How do you train a little girl in the area of modesty, not just on the outside, but the inside as well?
You know, one thing I tell parents for the outside part is that whatever you're going to do when they're older, hold that standard when they're younger. If you're going to be a parent who, when this daughter gets to have long legs and a beautiful figure and is 14 and looks like she's 18 and you don't want her to wear a two-piece bathing suit, then don't allow her to do it when she's 6. You want to be consistent all the way along with whatever things you're doing for modesty, because if you do it when she's 6 and it's fine and then she turns 13, you say, oh, you can't go out like that, honey. She'll internalize it with, what is wrong with me?
And what is modesty? You know, we talk about it being displayed on the outside, but it seems to me that the modesty that's displayed on the outside has really got to be a reflection of something on the inside. But what is that?
That's a good question. I think on the inside, it's saving oneself for that very special person that God has in mind for you.
Okay.
And that there's an allure that each woman is given, but instead of giving it away to every boy you see, you're going to wait and give that to your husband.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about some of those influences that go the negative direction, okay? We've talked about what parents can do and how they can nurture modesty and purity from really day one. But what about the peers, the peer group, the media? It seems like in this day especially, they have such tremendous influence on the way that we think and live. I think of the sordid story of the Borden homeschool murders. I don't know if you heard that story, but a lot of that began with that peer group and some of the influences that media played on those teens. How do teens make sure that their friends are going to be those that really build them up in the Lord instead of tearing them down? And how do we teach our children to seek out friendships like that?
You know, I have so many different teens come to me at different times saying, you know, I can just find no one that shares my views. I can't find anyone who doesn't want to awaken love until it's really time to pursue it. I can't find teens around me. And the answer I have for them is to pray. I mean, God has you in that position for a reason. And I believe that God will bring people of like-mindedness if they pray, but it's worth waiting for instead of just going with the crowd and going with the herd.
You know, it seems to me that there can be a lot of influences that come through the media. Sometimes we're not even aware of it, but they're constantly sharing these signals with us that point us in the direction of idolizing the body or developing oneself just for one's sensuality rather than for one's purity and one's love of God and love of each other in a biblical sense. How can we control the media, do you think, in our homes? And how do you guys do it?
You know, parents are the gatekeepers, and it's up to the parents how wide they want that gate to be open into their homes. I do a whole thing on media for parents. And one of the things I stress is for parents to think about what they are looking at their child is seeing differently. And at every age of development, almost until kids are 16 or 18, they are seeing something different than we are. So it's understanding that the media is affecting them more intensely than it is affecting even us. So if we say, well, that's not that bad, we need to be aware of how is that really setting a paradigm for my child? How is it laying a foundation? And it's much easier not to set those than to have to tear out cement later.
You bet. And Julie, I think there are some parents out there right now that may have to tear out a lot of cement. But if there's one thing you could tell parents, just sound the warning, encourage them to get involved in the raising of these little daughters and little sons. What would you say?
I'd say that it's so key that parents be involved. You know, parents are the number one reason why kids do not go out and have sex. And I think sometimes parents go with the lie that they can't keep their kids from doing anything when they're teens. Well, that's not true. You are the number one reason why they are not doing something. And so as much as the media and different messages are coming hundreds of times to them, we need to be more open and sharing with them just as many times and being the ones that are coming alongside them in this time.
Wow, that's powerful. You parents can do more than your youth pastor can do. You can do more than your pastors and your school counselors or anybody else in your child's life. You have far more import in your child's life than anybody else because God designed it to be that way. That's the message today from Julie Hiramine, and she heads up Generations of Virtue. Please check out her resources. She's got some great stuff online, folks, at www.generationsofvirtue.org. Again, www.generationsofvirtue.org. Julie, thanks so much for joining us on Generations.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, you can listen to this program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. Let me encourage you to get our free news magazine available quarterly from the check office by just going to kevinswanson.com on the web and click on Free News Magazine. You can sign up for it today again at kevinswanson.com. Ladies and gentlemen, let me encourage you to join us again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.